For Molly, Sebastian, Jack, and Francesca. Author's note. This book is based on hundreds of interviews with more than 150 people, including more than 60 former Theranos employees. Most of the men and women who appear as characters in the narrative do so under their real names, but some ask that I shield their identities, either because they feared retribution from the company, worried that they might be swept up in the Justice Department's ongoing criminal investigation, or wanted to guard their privacy. In the interest of getting the most complete and detailed rendering of the facts, I agreed to give these people pseudonyms. However, everything else I describe about them and their experiences is factual and true. Any quotes I have used from emails or documents are verbatim and based upon the documents themselves. When I have attributed quotes to characters in dialogues, those quotes are reconstructed from participants' memories. Some chapters rely on records from legal proceedings, such as deposition testimony. In the process of writing this book, I reached out to all of the key figures in the Theranos saga and offered them the opportunity to comment on any allegations concerning them. Elizabeth Holmes, as is her right, declined my interview requests and chose not to cooperate with this account. Prologue. November 17th, 2006. Tim Kemp had good news for his team. The former IBM executive was in charge of bioinformatics at Theranos, a startup with a cutting-edge blood testing system. The company had just completed its first big live demonstration for a pharmaceutical company. Elizabeth Holmes, Theranos's 22-year-old founder, had flown to Switzerland and shown off the system's capabilities to executives at Novartis, the European drug giant. Elizabeth called me this morning, Kemp wrote in an email to his 15-person team. She expressed her thanks and said that it was perfect. She specifically asked me to thank you and let you all know her appreciation. She additionally mentioned that Novartis was so impressed that they have asked for a proposal and have expressed interest in a financial arrangement for a project. We did what we came to do. This was a pivotal moment for Theranos. The three-year-old startup had progressed from an ambitious idea Holmes had dreamed up in her Stanford dorm room to an actual product a huge multinational corporation was interested in using. Word of the demo's success made its way upstairs to the second floor, where senior executives' offices were located. One of those executives was Henry Moseley, Theranos's chief financial officer. Moseley had joined Theranos 8 months earlier, in March 2006. A rumpled dresser with piercing green eyes and a laid-back personality, he was a veteran of Silicon Valley's technology scene. After growing up in the Washington, D.C. area and getting his MBA at the University of Utah, he'd come out to California in the late 1970s and never left. His first job was at chipmaker Intel, one of the Valley's pioneers. He'd later gone on to run the finance departments of four different tech companies, taking two of them public. Theranos was far from his first rodeo. What had drawn Moseley to Theranos was the talent and experience gathered around Elizabeth. She might be young, but she was surrounded by an all-star cast. The chairman of her board was Donald L. Lucas, the venture capitalist who had groomed billionaire software entrepreneur Larry Ellison and helped him take Oracle Corporation public in the mid-1980s. Lucas and Ellison had both put some of their own money into Theranos. Another board member with a sterling reputation was Channing Robertson, the associate dean of Stanford's School of Engineering. Robertson was one of the stars of the Stanford faculty. His expert testimony about the addictive properties of cigarettes had forced the tobacco industry to enter into a landmark $6.5 billion settlement with the state of Minnesota in the late 1990s. Based on the few interactions Moseley had had with him, it was clear Robertson thought the world of Elizabeth.